Welcome everyone, wherever you are. My name is Niels Nugtrin, and I'll be hosting today's webinar, which is part two of a series of two. Just a reminder, if anybody wants to view part one, you can find that on the ALICE-QI website. Today's session is about the integration of data analytics in support of quality systems and quality management in general. We have two guests, Gerben Dehaan and John Blankensop. John has a wealth of experience in quality management, over 40 years of experience to be exact. He's held a variety of different roles, from very, very hands-on to senior leadership roles and transformation management roles in the quality realm. So we're lucky to have John here. And then Gerben Dehaan is Chief Product Officer of ALICE-QI, which is a no-code quality management platform for manufacturing. He drives product strategy for the company and promotes data-driven integrated quality management. He has a background in business IT and is a thought leader in the space. Today's webinar will last about 45 minutes, maybe 50, 55. It will be recorded, and so anybody who joined will get a link after the webinar with a recording, so you can review it afterwards. If you'd like to ask anyone a question, Gerben or John, please do so in the public chat. I'll try my best to keep an eye on the chat and feed those questions into the session. I'd like to ask everybody to find the public chat facility on the right-hand side of your screen. And if you can just say hi, introduce yourself, where you're from, and I'd love to hear one or two words or sentences, however much you'd like to share, on your expectations for today's webinar. So if there's anything in particular you're hoping to get out of it, please share it in the chat, and I'll try and weave that into the discussion. But at the very least, just drop in and say hi and where you're from so we know you're out there. All right. So I want to start with recapping last session, which was with John. So we discussed in that session the significant drawbacks of a traditional quality management organizational structure where quality management is centralized and separate from the rest of the organization. And John explained his views on that, explained the drawbacks of that kind of model, and pitched actually a new paradigm where excellence is embedded throughout the enterprise and not separately in a separate quality management department. And he used his quality management universe framework as a target model for that discussion. We discussed the potential transformational pitfalls and approach and provided some real-world examples of organizations that have benefited from that model. So with that said, I'd like to just jump right in. And John, I'll start with a question to you. When you're transforming an organization from the old sort of traditional model of quality management, where quality management responsibilities are separate from the operation and centralized in a team. When you're transforming that organization to the other paradigm where quality management is embedded across the organization and excellence is everybody's responsibility, what do you look for in terms of technological support?
That's a great question. In that paradigm, that big Q quality management paradigm, you know, last time we talked about the integration of quality requirements and practices throughout the business system processes, and that these processes have to be well defined and they have to have interconnections. They have to connect with each other. Then from there, what's really important is that the system can manage the interaction of these processes. And so that's one of the things I look for with an IT solution is not only can it handle defining the connections between the processes within a business, but it can also manage the interaction of these processes. And that tends to be missing a lot of time. And when I talk about interactions, what I'm talking about are process objectives or process KPIs that are being established within each of these processes. And the interaction is the handoff between the output of one process becoming the input to another process. And that interaction is a moment of performance, right? Every interaction comes with an expectation of quality and of timeliness. Did we receive your output in a timely manner, in the time frame we needed it, or we established or defined? And did we get it at the level of quality that we expected? And, you know, I'm not just talking about production processes. I'm also talking about transactional processes throughout the organization as well. So this idea of excellence throughout the entire organization has to include an IT system that can effectively manage the interactions between the processes that are happening within the system as a whole. So that's one of the first things I look for, Nils.
Right, right. Understood. So Gerben, same question for you, but now from a more, from a technology perspective, when you're looking to support an organization in quality control, quality management and excellence, what does a system look like that can adequately do that? Like, what are the characteristics of a platform that is suitable for such a task?
Yeah, well, so I think as John describes it, any process is basically an input, a transformation, and an output. And you need to track the inputs, track the outputs, and then you're able to basically determine the quality of the transformation, which is the process that you want to evaluate. And of course, this is really abstract. But a QMS should allow you to define your own processes and to track the inputs and the outputs, quantify that, and then use that to dashboard or aggregate this information into KPIs. So talking about what should a QMS be able to do, it should allow you to define your own processes, because no two businesses are the same, and you don't want it to be identical to another or a predefined solution, because quality needs to be embedded in each and every process. So it needs to be embedded in your primary process as well. And your primary process is your strategic differentiator, of course. So you'd need to be able to tailor that to quite some extent. So that's, I think, one of the things to look for in software. And coming from a tech background, of course, it's very easy to trap into the fall of describing a QMS by the bells and whistles that you can buy in the market. But taking one step back, I think you should look at it as a QMS as a tool in general to help you to embed quality into each and every process. And then it shouldn't matter if it's paper or the most advanced AI solution. Anything that brings you to this state of building quality into each and every process is a proper solution there. And then, of course, the different technology will help you to become more efficient and more effective there. But I think for us as a vendor, we learned that assessing the maturity of the organization before starting the project is telling us a lot about the success rate of the actual implementation process. We'll probably touch upon that later today. But being able to describe what you're doing in terms of a process, I think, is what it all should start with. It's a famous quote by Deming, of course. If you are not able to describe what you're doing as a process, you don't know what you're doing. And if you don't know what you're doing, then I can guarantee you that implementing any tool won't be successful, and well, presumably running your business won't be successful either. So start with describing what you're doing, define the characteristics for your inputs and your outputs, start gathering data and start measuring your performance, and then the tooling comes thereafter.
Interesting. So tooling is secondary. It's in support of the business, and you're basically saying first get control of the operations, define where you are and where you want to be, and worry about the implementation of technology as a second step. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So why wouldn't I just run my organization with spreadsheets, Gervin?
Well, I think most of the organizations today are run based on spreadsheets. So it's a fact of life that you can perfectly run a business based on spreadsheets. But it comes at price of, well, inefficiency in the first place, and a lot of headache with people, burnouts even. So I wouldn't recommend it. But you can perfectly do it. So what we see, of course, is that increasing regulations requires organizations to track more information, which comes at, well, if you're in a spreadsheet shop, creating more spreadsheets, disconnected management is a pain in the ass. So it's inefficient and cumbersome. And of course, other technology comes into to play, and that will help you to improve your operation. But fundamentally, especially for smaller organizations or even in startups, I would advise use a spreadsheet. Start organizing before you automate. I think that's it. Mm-hmm. And if you see that your spreadsheet becomes a database rather than a spreadsheet, that's probably the point that you need to look at other solutions. If it's if you can manage it with just a few tens of rows in your Excel spreadsheet, then probably implementing a QMS is a bit overkill at the stage where you are at that moment in time. But then as you grow, and if you have well-defined processes as we talked about, then I think the moment comes that you should look at facilitating that process with a QMS, and then still, of course, not something that is set in stone, but something that's adaptable and that you can tailor as your maturity increases or as your company grows in general.
Yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense to me. So, John, last time on the last session, you explained your quality management universe framework with the six sort of areas. And I think you explained very succinctly, how those areas contribute to the overall performance of the enterprise. But a big aspect of what you described was sort of the interconnection between those areas.
Right.
And I could imagine that, having the ability to visualize performance in a real-time or near real-time way, where the data, sometimes comes from other disciplines, other departments, other areas of operation, right? So the challenge of sort of aggregating the data from wherever it needs to come to present some type of view on performance is probably an important, maybe not key, but an important prerequisite to be able to run an operation. Run an organization in this new model. I would expect, could you maybe recap the six areas of your model, right, and kind of highlight the ones where you think technology plays a more important role than others?
Yeah, sure. I think you nailed it. You hit the nail right on the head. One of the things that a technical solution has got to provide in this big Q quality approach is real-time feedback to the process owner. The idea of process ownership is critical in this model, because this is where the accountability framework, where we start to get away from quality being responsible for quality, and now each of these process owners are responsible for quality. So they're managing their process, or what we want them to be able to do is manage their process real time through a dashboard. So they're looking at the interactions of their process with other processes, and they're seeing real time how they're performing, and they can adjust their process as they go along. What I see in a lot of organizations is I see PowerPoint presentations being put together relative to performance and being reviewed at a monthly review meeting. So the performance has already happened last month. They're reporting on what happened last month, try to understand root causes to issues and what they can do to potentially resolve that. In today's world and the competitive environments that we're all in, process owners have got to be able to see that performance real time, and it has to be able to adjust to it real time. No more PowerPoint presentations, you know, a month from now. It's got to be right in front of you. And so those six areas that I talked about last time was organizational quality, customer quality from a requirement standpoint. Then there was product quality. There was supplier quality, process quality, and then customer quality from a satisfaction standpoint. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't believe that one would benefit over the other. They all benefit from the integration and of this IT solution that embeds analytics in each one of these six areas. Because what's very important is that these six areas are operating to support the system as a whole. No one area can sub-optimize at the expense of the system. So no one area seeks its own reward at the expense of the system as a whole. And that is a really tricky thing to understand and harmonize. And I think a good IT solution helps with that. It helps with understanding the optimization of all of those process areas so that everybody is contributing to the system as a whole. The mantra is that every process has to contribute its very best so that the system as a whole can produce the objectives. And this type of IT system, I believe, benefits all of those areas of quality equally. That's why I think it's very critical, Nils.
All right, thanks for that. So, Gerben, I'll turn to you. You know, when implementing quality management solutions and platforms, tell us a little bit about challenges you face. Like, first, maybe describe an overall approach of how to go about evaluating if you should implement a solution. And then tell us a little bit about, you know, common pitfalls.
Yes, great question. So we touched upon running your business based on spreadsheets, and I think every company starts with that. And then if you feel like the tooling isn't helping you to bring you to the next step as a company because of the inefficiencies and all of the manual labor you still need to do, then it's probably time to look at more standardized solution. And this doesn't only apply to QMS or quality management, of course. So then you start looking at solutions. And like I said, I think in order to come prepared, you should assess your processes and identify the exceptions in your process. And I think quality management thrives in standardized processes. And that doesn't mean that there's no exceptions. You can standardize the exceptions as well and have a clear definition of your processes with their exceptions, etc. And then go look for solutions that seem like a great fit. consult the review sites that you have, analysts like Gartner, for instance. They provide a lot of relevant information in comparing solutions and vendors. And then, well, I won't go into the details of vendor selection as such. There's a lot of documentation. We have some documentation on that on our website as well. But look at both the functionality as well as non-functional aspects like support, evaluate total cost of ownership, because different vendors have different models when it comes to the initial acquisition fees and licenses and support and upgrades, etc. So it's quite complicated to evaluate and to buy software to start with, and then it's even more complicated probably to find the right configuration for your solution. And of course, no code platforms like we offer are helping you to streamline that significantly. But still, it's a challenge to implement the software to your case. The hardest part, I think, is managing the change in the organization. So buying software is fairly easy. Configuring it is a tidbit harder. Managing the change and getting the alignment in the organization, making sure that everyone is adopting the software as it's intended. I think that's the hardest part, and that's what we see the most quality managers struggle with. And of course, we're there to help them, but don't underestimate that. I think implementing the software is perfectly doable, of course, but making sure that everyone is aware of the why behind it, I think it should start and end with that understanding. Making sure everyone is bought into the why, keep repeating that until you feel like a broken record. That doesn't matter. Keep repeating it, because ultimately that's what you need. And make sure that you as the functional owner are not the sole owner of the system in the organization. All the process owners should have ownership of their processes within the QMS. So the dashboards and the KPIs, well, you can facilitate it to set that up. I think your role as a quality department should be fairly similar in implementing the software as driving the operation or facilitating the operation better. So you should not implement the QMS for the organization, but you should team up with the process owners for them to implement it for their processes, because they are fully aware of these flowcharts and the exceptions and the routing of the workflows based on specific business scenarios. So let them do that so that they get trained on not only using it, but also implementing and adapting it, because KPIs will change, processes will change, and then you should not be the one responsible for doing the change, but to facilitate it, as I think the true nature of the quality department should be. You're muted.
I've heard you talk in the past quite a lot about the benefits of having a no-code solution, right? So could you maybe explain why that's important?
Yeah. So quality management, of course, is a very broad topic. John described the in each and every process. So if we look at QMS solutions and our QMS solution specifically, then we'd like to think of it as an end-to-end solution. So it should span your entire process, all the way from product development and supplier qualification evaluation throughout all of your manufacturing, registering deviations internally, externally, and following up, and all of the continuous improvement there. So it is a lot of processes and a lot of topics that you're touching if you look at the full breadth of a QMS, and then being able to implement that for your specific needs as an individual company without having to adjust your processes to the software, but in fact implement the software for your operation and being able to adapt the operation without being restricted by the software, that requires a lot of flexibility in the tooling. And to us, the no-code paradigm helps to realize that flexibility, because you can configure forms and workflows and business logic and everything there with a lot of expression power without having to code anything. So you can just click and drag and drop and use expressions that are no more complicated than your average Excel sheet. So it's something that every professional in a manufacturing organization, from the shop floor to the boardroom, everyone should be able to configure the application for their specific needs. So to us, that's instrumental in integrating the QMS into the primary process, because you won't, or any process basically, you won't adapt your primary process because your QMS doesn't allow you to configure workflows the way you want to have them run, because then you lose your strategic edge and your ability to change. So no-code to us is all about flexibility, and flexibility is all about success, because otherwise you end up with a QMS that might work today, but I'll guarantee you that your operation and your organization will look like something completely different in a year from now, let alone in 5 years. So it's not worth the investment, I think, to even consider a QMS that's fully set in stone.
Right. So in the end, right, the flexibility, but also empowerment of quality professionals, right, to cut the dependency on external teams to make changes. And then it's a way to guarantee sort of relevance, not just now, but in the future, because as your organization changes, if your QMS is static, you'll get a divergence. But if you're able to, through the no-code capability, able to sort of make the QMS change, adapt to your business, then it stays relevant. So just sort of summarizing what we've discussed so far in terms of characteristics for business support or support of excellence in the organization from a technology perspective, we've heard the words real time, we've heard about interoperability, we've heard about flexibility and / no code. I was wondering, Gerben, I'll keep the spotlight on you for a little longer. If you could talk to us about the real-time nature of software and also interoperability. So those are key requirements. Tell us what to look for and what to avoid.
Yeah. And specifically focusing on manufacturing context right now because of the relevance of the real-time feedback there, I think. But if you're running your operation and you're collecting a lot of data, and you don't collect this data just for the sake of collecting it, because there's value in this data. Otherwise, you wouldn't be spending time validating your products and then collecting all this. So you do want to do something with that. The quicker you can get that data, interpret it, analyze it, and feed it back to the people who can actually control the process, the quicker you can adapt things. So if you have inline measurements in your manufacturing process and you detect deviations, then if that takes 15 minutes to be processed and be analyzed and fed back into the operation, then you're losing 15 minutes of quality, presumably. So the more immediate you can get that interpretation done, feed it back to the operators with instructions to change process settings or the speed of the conveyor belt or something or whatever the flow, doesn't matter. The quicker you can feed them that information, the quicker they can fine-tune things and get your quality back up again. So it's not a matter of convenience, it's a matter of dollars, basically, because you're reducing waste and rework if you have an immediate feedback. And this, of course, is very tangible and visible, and the, looking at it from a shop floor perspective. But I think the same holds true for product development and for your customer complaints. The quicker you can get to actionable insights from your data, the quicker you can change things for the better, and the quicker you reduce your error rates or improve your brand reputation and anything basically. So and then so that's high impact effects, I think, of being able to tap into these data streams quicker and not just presenting them but also interpreting them and using all of the SPC and the analytics capabilities you have to understand and to make it actionable. But also on the efficiency side, so we have a lot of customers that prepare dashboards to represent the performance of their processes, and maybe you have a weekly or a bi-weekly quality meeting and you need to go through your deviations and the follow-up actions there, and we see a lot of people struggling with that before they implement a QMS or LQS specifically, because they need to sift through a ton of different systems or sheets to gather this information, whereas with our dashboard you have the information available immediately, literally in real time, or maybe with a 5 minutes delay because your dashboard refreshes every 5 minutes, but that's about it. And then instead of preparing half a day for your meeting, it's just a matter of opening the dashboard and there it is. So it's and this is, of course, this takes away workload from your operational management. So that's impactful in itself, but probably from a different order of magnitude than the fundamental changes I just described with the immediate feedback you can get on the shop floor. So to me, it's much more about the total cost of quality that you're addressing there than efficiency. Efficiency is nice for the people involved, but the business should look at the more fundamental impact, I think.
Mm. Yeah, great. Right. John, I remember from last conversation, our last webinar, that you talked about when we were on the topic of governance, how, prior to transforming an organization to this new model where quality is embedded, you know, meetings, monthly stand-up meetings or monthly meetings were sort of ineffective. People looking at PowerPoints, not really, you know, relevant information, also not really taking ownership, because they felt quality maybe isn't their responsibility. You know, there's all sorts of qualitative aspects of these meetings that were missed. But then you painted a picture of a meeting where, you know, all of a sudden things are, you know, with the new paradigm, things are more effective. People are talking about things that matter. People are taking ownership, and if they're not, they're being assigned ownership by others, right? So kind of bring us back to that part of your story, and then maybe, I don't know if you have any examples of organizations where technology, you know, they were either under automated or incorrectly automated, and sort of how that impacted, their excellence.
Yeah. So that's really critical. In my opinion, if you're trying to manage excellence across an organization using PowerPoint presentations in monthly review meetings, you're kind of doomed. You're not going to get there. So this whole idea of real-time feedback is important. So if you can visualize holding performance review meetings with leadership, maybe it is on a monthly basis, but you're literally looking at a live dashboard in that review session. You're not looking at prepared, massaged, you know, let's make sure we tell a good story kind of presentation. It is what it is, and each process owner stands up in front of the rest of the leadership team and speaks to the performance of their process. And if they have issues, they are talking about what they understand to be the root cause to those issues, what action plans they have in place, and most importantly, what is their prediction for recovering to the performance levels that the organization is expecting of them. I think that's really critical. You've got to get into this mindset that when you aren't performing to a target, not only do you have to understand what you have to do to correct that, but you have to give the organization an insight as to when you're going to recover to that performance level. I think that's where the quality 4.0 realm starts to come in, and the use of AI starts to come into this conversation as well. So I am starting to interact with an organization that's using AI, not only in real-time feedback to understand what's happening across their processes, but as expert agents to look for pockets of sub-optimization and how the system as a whole can constantly be optimized. And they're experimenting with scenario planning using AI. So if they try to make an improvement in one process, what impact is it going to have on the system as a whole? And what impact will it have on optimizing the system as a whole? So I'm starting to see, you know, this idea of quality 4.0, I'm starting to see it evolve into that, where AI is starting to play a role in feeding back to the organization, not only what's happening in the processes, but where there's areas of sub-optimization and what can be done to optimize as a whole. I don't think that's prevalent right now, but I'm seeing it starting to happen. I'm still working with companies, though, that hold reviews on a quarterly basis, on a monthly basis, talking about performance that happened, you know, a month ago, and just really lagging in a proactive approach of excellence, right? It's there's no better time to make an improvement than the time when, you know, the opportunity for improvement occurs, not 30 days from now. So once you do get this big Q idea down and you start to form that framework and structure, now you're in a position that you can take IT solutions and AI and the rate at which AI is evolving to really be able to help run the business. And once you get to this point, nobody should have any problem convincing leadership to invest in this opportunity, in these opportunities. It sells itself at that point, in my opinion. So you've got to get to that place. You've got to get those transitional fundamentals in place well before you're bringing in IT solutions. But once you get it all together, then you watch, you know, this era of quality 4.0 is just, it's just going to take off, in my opinion. So,
Point is clear, right? So that you touched on a lot of things, and these are things that we've talked about in the past, having a culture of quality, and then also, you know, how you sort of below that, how you organize yourself and effectively. And technology, of course, is sort of, you know, tertiary. It's sort of in support of the other things that I think are more fundamental, but they are nevertheless, I think, a prerequisite, right? They might not be the first thing that you need to address, but it's also, I think, not possible to get there to a real quality 4.0 level without it. Would that be a fair characterization?
Yeah, it would be fair. And you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, because no matter how many times I talk about this transformational kind of mindset, there's always a question around, well, what happens if leadership's not bought in? What do we do about that? How do we get leadership to buy in? And that's, you know, that's constantly on my mind. And one of the things I'm starting to think about is, yes, culture is very important. You have to establish the expectations of behavior, of habits, of mindset from everybody in the organization. But then you have to think about building a system that aligns with that. So it's one thing to have the culture, but it's another thing to build a system that is going to enable that culture. And now what you do is you create this dynamic. Culture drives system, system drives culture. Culture drives system drives culture, right? So people are saying, well, we can't get leadership to buy in. Well, probably because the structure of your system doesn't engage leadership as having to be bought in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's this relationship. So the culture feeds how you're going to build the system. The system is going to continue to feed the culture. And so you got to create that kind of dynamic, I believe, to get rolling. And that, you know, when I talk about alignment as being key, I think that's what I'm trying to explain. So it's really critical. I mean, we can talk culture. It's important to talk culture, but you've got to match that energy of talking culture with learning how to build a system that is going to enable that culture.
Right.
And that's through the execution of what you do. And your IT solution and your monitoring of performance is going to give you feedback if culture translated into the system and the system is feeding culture and you're creating that dynamic. So I think, I don't know if I've always articulated that in that way before, but I think in my mind, that's how I'm starting to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it also explains why it can be difficult, right, to make these changes, because there is that reciprocal dependency, right? You can't have change culture without a system, but you can't have a system without the right culture. And I'm sure a lot of people, that's sort of the agony that a lot of people feel, I think, right? Yep. They're caught in this trap.
Totally.
And they don't know whether to manage up or manage down, right? But the answer is probably both. But that's a difficult thing to change.
Yeah, right? I'll give you a very quick example. If you're an organization where you've implemented a quality management system and you've implemented the system as a clause-based system, I call it. So you took the structure of ISO 9001, let's say, and you imposed it on top of your company, and you said, now this is our quality management system, and this is why we have this system, and it's very clause-based driven, you are going to struggle getting leadership to buy into that. That system is not structured to enable leadership buy-in. It's very difficult. That becomes a system that quality owns. Quality assurance as a group owns that system, and you're going to have a hard time pulling in leadership. Mm-hmm. Even if your cultural statements are all, you know, put together succinctly, mm-hmm. you've got to shift that system from little Q to big Q, where you're process oriented, you're creating process owners, and you're starting to build an accountability structure in the system that's pulling in leadership. They have no choice. It's the way it's set up, mm-hmm. and it's set up to align with the aspirations mm-hmm. of the cultural expectations. So I work with many people right now, or have in the past, where their QMS is very clause-based in its structure, mm-hmm. and they complain because they can't get leadership to buy into it and that they're held responsible for it. And it's because of the way it's structured.
Right. So back to the, that's a very important point, right? And it sort of links back to what Gerben said earlier about having the configurability, right? So that your technology doesn't drive the organization, but the other way around, right?
Absolutely critical. I think his point is spot on. Integrating an IT solution will fail if you haven't really, done a good job of defining your processes, who your process owners are, what their KPIs are going to be, and how they interconnect with each other. This idea of end-to-end solution is spot on, in my opinion. If you bring IT solution in and you don't have that figured out, it's going to be a really rough go. Right. So I think that's, you know, going to be the first step, is shifting to that process approach and integrating the requirements of quality into all of those business system processes, establishing the interconnections, establishing who owns what, create that accountability of the interaction between the processes, and you put yourself in a really good position to then take it to the next level.
Great. I'd like to switch gears here a little bit and link back to something that you said earlier, John, when you were talking about quality 4.0 and the role of technology. You referenced some organizations that were playing around with AI with good results, or at least good preliminary results. Gerben, I know you must have thoughts on the topic of AI and the role of AI in the future of the world of QMS. So maybe share your thoughts. How is AI going to change this technology, and what value will it add?
Yeah, so John just talked about the culture of quality in organization and how systems contribute to that, and this spiraling improvement, hopefully. So, and I think AI can contribute to that spiraling up, because to us, the culture of quality is impacted by or improved by awareness, involvement, and ownership. So people need to be aware of the quality performance. They need to be actively involved in the quality operation, and they need to feel ownership for quality. So this is all about embedding quality throughout the organization. And the lower we can make the more accessible we can make the quality systems, the easier it is to get people involved and to make them aware and to feel them to make them feel owners of the quality. And with AI, and more specifically agentic AI, we see a trend where you can interact with systems in a very natural way. So instead of having to create a user account and go through a training and familiarize yourself with the system and keep track of the navigational flows and things like that, you can just chat or even speak to the QMS. So we have been playing around with a few prototypes where we added an agent in the Microsoft Teams application, and you can just chat with it and ask it, okay, how many customer complaints did we have last week? And then it provides you with some data, and you can ask it, okay, represent that as a pie chart or a bar chart, and then play around with that. So it's really accessible, and everyone can engage with the QMS without any prior knowledge as to what data is there, what type of classification do we use for a customer complaints or whatever. You just ask it a question as if you were new to the organization and would ask your quality engineer or the quality manager the same questions, and it comes back with sound answers. So that makes it much more accessible. Adopting a QMS or its deliverables, basically, because you're no longer adopting the software as such, but you're consuming the services of it, I think will contribute to this awareness, involvement, and ownership, and thereby driving the culture of quality. And it's really it's intriguing from a user perspective, of course, and from a development perspective as well, because traditional software vendors or software development in a traditional fashion was you build a good knowledge of a specific domain or industry, and then you identify the common problems there, and you're basically generating the solution, predicting the solution to that problem. So it's really prescriptive in that sense that, okay, this is the problem that I'm helping to solve, and this is the way you can solve this problem. But with AI, we're feeding we're generating an infrastructure, feeding that with domain knowledge, and it has the power to reason and to interact with all this information. So as a tech vendor, we don't, of course, we still need to have this solid understanding of the domain, but we don't need to predict which problems we're going to solve for you, and we don't need to predict which questions you are going to ask it. We provide you with the infrastructure, and then we're releasing this to the users, and they can interact with it and ask their questions. So we're much more a provider of an infrastructure and a generic tool rather than these predefined set of problems and a predefined set of solutions. So the solution space is extremely bigger than it used to be. So that's really intriguing for us. And of course, everyone's still sorting out how that will play out in reality. And then all of the caveats with jailbreaking the models and things like that, we're all sorting that out. But that's a matter of time. And I think that will be a huge impact in and a paradigm shift in how we interact with software. It's becoming a colleague rather than a tool in the way we interact with it and the quality it delivers. So it's I think everyone is excited, or most of us are really excited about it. And at LSQI, we're investing in it and bringing the first features to the market these days that are based on this technology. And then, we're eager to explore more use cases there.
Excellent. Thanks for that. Well, believe it or not, we are coming towards the end of our webinar. We have about 5 minutes left, maybe eight minutes left. So what I'd like to do is open it up for questions from the attendees, see if there are any straggling questions, the topics that we haven't discussed. We'd love to answer them. So anybody who's attending the webinar, please just put your questions in the chat and we'll get John and Gerben to answer them. And while we're waiting for you to think about that, I just wanted to remind everybody that after the webinar, we will send you a recording of the link, a link of the recording, apologies, and be on the lookout for additional episodes of Quality Talks. We plan to explore lots of different other topics. So if you're interested in those, you can find those on our website, and we'd love to see you back.
Hey, Nils.
Yeah.
I'd love to make one point while we're waiting to see if we get any questions. We're talking about quality 4.0. We're talking about IT solutions to help that. We're talking about AI. This is all important. But to put it in perspective, we've been in the era of quality 4.0 for over 20 years now, 25 mm-hmm. years, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm talking about this integration of quality requirements into business system processes, that's a quality 3.0 concept. That's right. Not a quality 4.0 concept. So if you're in an organization that isn't there yet, you have to catch up to get into quality 4.0. If you want to say you're in quality 4.0, then this whole transformation from little Q to big Q, that had to happen first. And I think in past ASQ conference presentations, I was really trying to sound the alarm, like, hey, wait a minute, quality 4.0 sounds fantastic, but I'm not so sure we have quality 3.0 down really good. So, I mean, that's a point I want to make. We have got to, if we want to be in quality 4.0, we've got to be big Q. You've got to take that 3.0 ideas of Duran and Deming and Ishikawa and some of the other greats before you can really feel like you're going to dive into quality 4.0.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate you calling that out, John. It is true. I can also say from my perspective as a technology provider and as someone who speaks to lots of different quality professionals every year, you know, hundreds, literally. I'm always a little astounded, to be very frank, how little we have progressed, as a discipline. I think the ideas are there, right? I think there are clear concepts and ideas, so there is a clear path. But As a whole, I think it's fair to say that the maturity of the industry, manufacturing industry, when it comes to implementing quality concepts, is there's a long way to go. And you know, that's an opportunity, I think, for all of us, right? But we have to grasp that. And I think all the conversations that we've had in the past about culture of quality, about understanding the impact of quality on business results, about quality 4.0 technology, all of these things are contributors to that discussion. But you're right. I think, you know, we have to, you know, if you're part of an organization where you're, you know, you're still struggling with the fundamentals, then obviously that's where we need to start, right? And talk. I will thank everyone for their attendance would like to ask everyone to keep an eye out on the next Quality Talks. John and Gerben, thank you for joining. Appreciate your contributions as always. And we'll see each other next time.